Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shaped the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
Thanks again so much for being part of Catholic Sports View this week. Part two of our special look back at the 2016-17 school year. And as we begin part two, we take a look at the basketball that happened this season. And Gary McKnight at Modern Day is certainly a legend. And we had a chance to catch up with Coach McKnight out at Modern Day as his team was in the midst of another fabulous season.
You know, as I walk in the into your office here, you know, there's that big wall, the big mural along the wall here is inside the gym, and it's the history of Modern Day Athletics. So much of that is focused on the basketball program and what you've accomplished here. The names, you know, the Taylor Kings and the Cedric Bozemans, and it goes back even further than that, and even the more recent guys. Do you ever get a chance to sit back and reflect? I know you're a busy guy, and this season is always on your mind, but are there times in the offseason where you reflect back on some of those kids and some of those times at this stage in your career?
Well, they were all very special. Some of the kids that were stars, some of the kids that weren't stars. But what's nice is most of them come by and stop by and say hi to Coach. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, I feel like I did something right. Because they come by, they'll talk, they want to go out to lunch. And for my 64th birthday, I had four of my five starters show up here on my birthday and surprise me. And, you know, I still call them my kids, and they're all four were 50 years old. You know, sometimes you got to take a step back, but I still refer to them as my kids. And, you know, it's been just a great experience. You know, at first I thought, well, maybe I can coach high school. Maybe I can get a chance to be assistant college coach. Then I realized the grass isn't always greener. And I had a great situation and a nice job. And I had five sons go through school here, and it just... It's been a great situation for me.
What were the, in your early days, what was your first exposure to the game of basketball as a kid and maybe as a high schooler?
Never played basketball in my life. I was a baseball player, and I messed around a little bit with football, but I was a baseball player and played 2 years of college baseball at Saddleback College and was a catcher and outfielder and really loved baseball. And when I was about 16, I was coaching youth baseball in San Clemente, where I grew up. And a friend of mine said, hey, they're having a youth basketball program. They need some coaches. So I went over and started coaching youth basketball. Then I started coaching at the boys club. Then I started coaching travel ball. And, you know, it'd be nothing to have 10 or 12 games in a weekend with travel ball. And I just fell in love with the game because it was something that was indoors and you could practice anytime you wanted to. It was a lot of action, and I really started enjoying it. And the funny thing is, 2 months before I got the head job here, I was a finalist for the head baseball job at Ocean View High School. I was going to be the head baseball coach. Jim Harris was going to be my assistant, and then I was going to be his assistant in basketball. And they gave it to another guy who said they had more longevity in the school district. He coached 1 year and became an administrator, or else I'd have been the head baseball coach at Ocean View, and who knows what would have happened.
Wow. Imagine how history would have changed there.
Never know.
You bring up, Coach Harris over at Ocean View, and your name and his name are synonymous with Orange County basketball. Over the years, you've taken that mantle to the highest number, all-time winningest coach in the state. Do you think about your legacy? Is that something that has interested you over the years, or you just keep winning because the players keep coming?
You know, we've been very fortunate. We've had so much success early that we continually get some top players. And let's face it, you can't win unless you have some of the best players.
Right.
And I've been blessed with some not only very talented players, but great kids. And, you know, every day I come to work, I have fun. And just I enjoy driving to work because just being around the kids and being involved with them on a day-to-day, I look more forward to that than I do living in the past or the wins or what have you. That takes care of itself. But, you know, I just really enjoy looking forward to the next game and figuring out a game plan. And year to year, the teams change, so you got to change your style. And I've been very fortunate to have some great assistant coaches. Jason Quinn played for me in 87 and 90, and he's been my assistant other than his 4 years in college. He's just tremendous. He's my associate head coach, and he takes a lot of work off my shoulders. But the school's been very supportive of me. Our academics are top-notch. Our campus ministry is just tremendous, and we just have a lot of cornerstones here that make this place special. And this is something that after a while I just said, you know, this is the place I'm going to be for the rest of my career.
Modern Day head boys basketball coach Gary McKnight joining us here on Catholic Sports View. You mentioned, you know, how the game changed. How much has the game of basketball changed in 30 plus years?
Well, I don't think I can be as tough a guy as I used to be. In the 80s, you could be a lot tougher, and nowadays, times have changed, and kids still like discipline as long as you're fair. If you're not fair, no, it doesn't go good. But as long as you're fair, the kids like discipline. And we have a unique situation because we have kids here sometimes could average 25, 30 points at some schools, might average 17 or 18, but they're playing with kids and they're going to go a long way in the playoffs and have a lot of exposure, you know, college-wise. We've had over 70 major colleges come through the gym this year. It's a nice situation, and the kids, getting talented kids to play together is not always the easiest thing, but it's worked pretty well.
Sometimes it's about being a coach. Sometimes it's about being another father. Sometimes it's about being a friend or something that, you know, each kid maybe individually needs out of you. Is that maybe the toughest job is to get that many personalities in the same room and make it mesh the way it seems to have always done over the years?
Well, the camaraderie between the staff and the kids, you know, we have a group of kids that year in, year out that set the tone for each other. Guys realize that you got to play together. Guys realize that you're playing with some other kids that can play the game too. For me personally, coming sitting here and kids walk by me and talk to me all day long, it's the greatest job in the world.
Yeah.
The very next week, we went out to Orange Lutheran High School and talked to their longtime basketball coach, Chris Nordstrom. He started at Modern Day, went over to Orange Lutheran, and has built quite a powerhouse with the Lancers as well.
Well, of course, I wanted to bring up the win over Modern Day, and I'm sure maybe other coaches come up to you and maybe want to pick your brain. Hey, what's the secret, right? Because you're the one that got them. You're in the building here at Orange Lutheran. I got to call a game,
right,
unfortunately,
right,
so
right.
One of the thrills for me to be able to see that happen, because it never happens. Modern Day doesn't lose in league. What was the secret that night? And obviously, it's got to still be a fresh memory for you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think one of the things that sometimes my team struggle with is because I work there, and because Coach McKnight and I are still friends, like that game doesn't freak me out. And I think sometimes our kids almost want me to have a little bit different vibe or energy. So I have to kind of sell that to them. Like, guys, I don't care that it's Modern Day. I just want to go beat it. Like, I don't think about it that way. And I know our kids, it's hard not to, right? That MD means something when you walk into a game, no question. So I think for whatever reason, there have been a few teams of ours that have really just sort of stepped up and competed on those nights against them. I think we've had our games where they've blown us out, but we've had games, you know, several that have been less than 10. And I think in those nights, what's happened is we've just competed. We haven't worried about who we're playing against. And that particular night, I don't even think, I mean, to be frank, I don't know that it was our best game that season. We were good, and they were too. We were very talented. We certainly had really good guards because we had James Douglas, Gabe York, and Peyton Banks all at the same time, which is going to make anybody. I'm a great coach, right, with that backcourt. But I think in that particular night, we really matched them physically. And we set the tone early physically, and I think that went a long ways. And that is a great basketball game. You called it, but it's just a great high school basketball game. And as much as Gary hates to lose, and you know that he hates to lose, you know, weeks later when he talked to me again after that, he talked about how great a game it was, you know, which is a pretty cool thing, right? And also in that year, I believe the two of us won back-to-back CF championships on the same night in the same session in front of full crowds, which was really cool too, right? Like, hey, look, we competed as hard as we could. We split during the season, and then here we go back-to-back as a league in 1A and 1AA. That was a really cool. That was kind of fun as well to kind of be able to, especially because, again, I hate playing against Gary only because we're friends. Not because I don't mind playing Modern Day, but we're still friends, and you know, it's still that it's a little uncomfortable, right? I work anyway, so it's this weird dynamic, but it's fun to beat him. I know that.
Does it mean more because it's Coach McKnight? Because you learned under his wing and you came out from that program?
Yeah, I think any coach that's really really good, right? And certainly Gary's the best, as you know. Ultimately, he's gonna probably go down as best high school coach ever. But certainly in the argument right now, if you look at the losses, that's the crazy part. It's not the wins; it's the losses. Is that, you know, anytime you can beat a coach like that, but when you have a chance to beat a mentor and stuff, you know, of course, right, that's going to feel good, I guess, and certainly holds a special place. But playing against any, you know, we played this guy out last year in Arizona at the coach at Mountain View High School. Yeah, like 700 wins.
Wow.
Well, that's a nice win, you know, when we beat them, right? Because, look, if you've won 700 basketball games, I don't care what players you have, you're doing a good job. And so we've had a couple games like that where, you know, you, as a coach, you're like, man, I'm going against a legend. I hope we can at least stay in it, you know, and then to get a win in those games always feels really good.
Visiting with Chris Nordstrom out here at Orange Lutheran High School, the boys basketball coach this week on Catholic Sports View. What are the keys to not only building a program, which you've done here, but to keep it at the top. You mentioned, we'll talk about more about the Trinity League, but it kind of leads us into it now. You know, St. John Bosco, that program has really flourished. And Santa Margarita's come back now in the past couple of years. That's another program starting to rise up again. How tough is it to get the talent into the program and keep this program at that high level?
It's really tough. I mean, I think probably the biggest thing is you've got to have the right foundation. This kind of gets back to me with lower level coaches or the guys that are working with our varsity guys. You've got to have the right staff. If those parts are in place and you are dedicated to developing your players and maximizing what they do, then I think you're going to get what you can out of them every year. You know, some years you're going to be more talented than others. Some years you're going to be a little younger than others, what have you. But if you kind of just stay the course, if you have a clear-cut plan, a mission in place, I think some of the things that really help us here, aside from that character development, we are very lucky that I have a strength and conditioning coach on campus that's assigned to our program. He has other sports that he works with, but he works with boys basketball, Joe Morales, and he sits down with me every year. Hey, coach, what do you want? How do you want this to look? What do you need your kids to do? And we do it all, nutrition, the amount of time they should be spending in the weight room, how they're lifting, the body mechanics, the stretching, everything is all, you know. So some of those things I think are really helping us as we're trying to develop our kids. In the Trinity League, I think we have the fewest boys of any school.
You know, if you start, you're right, 1,200 at the
school. Yeah,
right?
So we're looking at 600 boys. I mean, right. I think Servite has 800 or 900. You know, so if you start comparing it that way, you know, we are starting from behind a little bit just from the sheer number of kids. We certainly have a lot more dual sport athletes than a lot of the other schools, which I love. I think it's great. And I think that those kind of things, we have to just maximize what we're getting out of our kids. And so that's a challenge. And I think trying to find a way to be steady, you know, as best you can, right? We work very hard to build relationships with our kids. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be struggles. Just kind of stay on the course, being as steady as you can, and try not to get too emotional one way or the other, I think, has helped us.
Quick break here on Catholic Sports View. We'll continue our best of part two this week. And when we come back, we'll have a couple of segments when we were out at Servite High School. Stay with us right here on Catholic Sports View. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View. I'm Bob Gibson, and a couple of months ago, we were out at Servite High School, and we talked to their longtime wrestling coach and athletic director, Alan Clinton. He's certainly a legend in wrestling circles in Southern California, and it was a pleasure to sit down and talk wrestling and the entire athletic program that he oversees with the Friars.
You want to start off with the wrestling program, because I know it's near and dear to what you've done here at Servite for so many years. How did you first get involved with the sport of wrestling?
I wrestled in high school and then had the opportunity, went on to junior college, and then I got my education paid for. I was brought down and scholarship to Cal State University Fullerton. So it's been in the blood for quite some time.
What is it about wrestling that attracted you to the sport?
Probably the getting to knock people around a little bit. You know, I'm from the Central Valley, so football and wrestling are the two sports there, and I did them both. So you kind of do is what they do, you know, where you live. So that was kind of what brought it on.
They always go hand in hand, don't they? It seems like football and wrestling.
Most definitely. They, like you said, they're hand in hand. And if you want to be successful with one, you try to usually do the other one. They kind of go hand in hand, work together very well.
Do good football players make the best wrestlers, or vice versa?
You know what? It really, that's kind of a hard thing to say, because some really good football players aren't real good wrestlers, and kids that want to be real good football players sometimes make real good wrestlers, because it brings out, you know, the self-confidence, works on their balance and agility and all that kind of stuff, so they end up going from number three on the ladder to number one on the ladder. And so, you know, and sometimes, you know, guys that are great football players make great wrestlers. You know, it's throw the dice, really, you know, give and take a little bit each way.
There's a handful of sports that are singular sports where you compete individually. You know, tennis, golf, of course, come to mind, and wrestling seems to be the biggest one. Is that part of the draw? Is the challenge of being the only person out there? You have to rely on yourself the entire time?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. You know, there's nobody else to blame, and so, you know, what happens, happens, and I think that's what really helps young men that want to be good football players, because they learn that, you know, if you want to get it done, you find a way to do it yourself, so you're not out there blaming the other 10 guys. And they actually end up being very good football players because they learn how to do stuff one-on-one. So it's a very nice gift to have, you know, where you can take on people and take responsibility for what happens.
Right. It also seems to be the sport that you need the most self-discipline in order to compete at the highest levels, or maybe even to compete at all.
most definitely. I mean, there isn't an area that's not touched in wrestling. You know, you got to know. You got got your diet, you've got your rest, you got to keep your studies up, your mental training and your physical training. There's not many other sports where every package comes together. Probably the closest would be water polo, you know, where you would kind of have a link between the two. But wrestling's kind of a unique breed in itself, so I guess that's why they say we're a different breed. So, but yeah, it takes every aspect to actually be successful in the sport.
Alan Clinton, longtime wrestling coach out here at Servite, joining us this week on Catholic Sports View. At what point did you know that coaching might be something you wanted to try your hand in?
Well, it was kind of interesting because when I went to college, I started off as a criminal justice major and actually liked it. And then my coaches started coming to me and saying, you know, we really think you'd be good in this field, you know, type situation. So one of the counselors had a nice little tug on me and said, I think we're going to go this avenue. So, you know, you like to graduate, you know, and do things. So that's kind of where it went. And then I started getting involved in it and, you know, kind of on the side a little bit while I was still competing. And it actually has become my niche. So I think I'm very blessed because due to the fact that, you know, a lot of people do a lot of things they don't like to do. I can honestly say that I got the opportunity to enjoy what I did my whole career. So right. It's kind of nice.
Did you know that Servite was going to be in your future, or is this where you start? Where did you get your coaching start?
I actually, I was at El Medina High School for 21 years. Right. I was the AD wrestling coach and football coach over there. I coached with Bob Lester in football. So I was there for 21 years, and then I'm now in my 11th year here at Servite, and we're actually in our 10th season of wrestling. So every day's a new day. You never know what's going to happen, but I've been very fortunate, very blessed to be able to do what I'm doing. So every place I've been has been a great opportunity for me. So just following the trail.
Right. Was that the challenge? You know, to come here out of school like Servite, which obviously competes at the highest levels, and to put a program together here?
Yeah, it was, because they'd never had wrestling. You know, the school opened in 1958, and they'd never had the sport of wrestling. And the president, Pete Bowen, had for 2 years been trying to convince me to come over. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the time frame when I made the jump, it was the right time. You know, how you have those times in life where you go, hey, you know, now would be a good time. So a big challenge, because you're starting from scratch again after having a dynasty over at El Medina. You know, now you're starting to scratch again. And you spend the first year, my wife sat in the stands and laughed at me because we were trying to make sure we got our singlets on the correct way. And, you know, we knew how to tie our shoes. So that was quite different from going and winning CF titles. But it hasn't taken us long to get back on track again. So I've got a great group of young men, and they've got it rolling for me.
We know there's a handful of great programs here in Southern California. You know, the wrestling program, you know, Calvert Chapel, obviously, you know, comes to mind, that has had so many champions. Was there a blueprint, you know, in your El Medina teams, of course, but was there a blueprint in mind? Was there something you saw in other programs? Was it a mixture of everything that you wanted to kind of, you know, set down here?
Well, you know, you steal what's good and you throw away what's bad. That's always been my philosophy. So I had a very nice blueprint at Elmo, and I said, you know, I mean, public, private, it really doesn't matter. You know, if you're going to be successful, you're going to be successful wherever you go. So we kind of had the blueprint, but like I said, in my mind, the day that you stop trying to get better is the day you probably ought to retire. So, you know, like I said, we steal what's good, you know, look around, take what's bad and put it in the trash can and just try to keep getting a little bit better, you know, every day. So that's kind of our motto around here.
Staying out at Servite, we also visited with Dane Jaco. He certainly has a unique story, and his travels from football player to football coach to golf coach at Servite High School. And the program he's built at Servite, certainly one of the best in the entire state. You're really a football guy who became a golf coach, right?
That is correct. It was an interesting one. I was, you know, I came to Servite to teach and to coach football. And I was walking from my office down the locker room one day, and old-time basketball coach Larry Walker was walking toward me. And he said, I hear you golf. And I said, well, I own a set of golf clubs. And he goes, come and see me after school. You're a new golf coach. And I said, coach, is this something we can talk about? And he goes, well, if you want to keep your job, I mean, I guess we could talk about it, you know. So it was pretty much on the lines of that. And, you know, we talked about it and was willing to do whatever I needed to do to help out the school. But I don't know that I envisioned how this all played out through the years, but that was how it began.
What was your level of golf knowledge at the time in regards to how much you could teach it to somebody else?
That would pretty much be zero. I mean, you know, my dad and I, we played. My dad was an avid golfer. So, you know, from the etiquette side and, you know, knowing your way around a golf course and, you know, that type of thing, you know, I was fine. You know, but as far as the golf swing and, you know, the details of mapping a team together in golf and all that type of stuff, scheduling, you know, I pretty much had no clue.
Well, you were a three-sport guy yourself in high school. You went to Artesia High School. Like I said, football. I think you were a baseball guy as well, ran some track. What was your path? Did you think football was going to be your path all the way through?
I think, you know, football was always my first love. Well, let me back that up. I think baseball was always my first love. We, you know, the head baseball coach at Servite, Sean Gilbert, and I always joke because baseball is my first love, and football is his first love. So I don't know how this all played out, but, you know, I wanted to pick a college where I could do both, so I wound up back at Upper Iowa University in Iowa, and it was one of the few schools that would allow me to play both in college, and so I went back there and did both, and it all worked out. I enjoyed my time back there, so it was pretty much split, but I think, you know, football, kind of, I was leaning toward football, and then I went on to go to some camps in the USFL and the NFL and found out, you know, not big enough, not fast enough pretty quickly, and that was the end of that.
Right. I was going to mention, you did get a chance to play in the USFL, correct?
I did for a brief time. You know, enjoyed that. I learned a lot. I think it helped me a lot, you know, in my coaching career. So it was brief.
We've read the stories. We've seen the documentaries. Was the USFL everything it's made out to be?
You
kind
know,
of the renegade league, you know?
Well, back then, you know, anybody that, you know, it's my age is going to tell you the same thing. I mean, you know, there was no concussion. It was, you got your bell rang, set out for a couple plays, and so you got your bearings straight, and, you know, you're free to go back in.
Right.
Looking back on it, my friends and I joke about it. We probably had 24 concussions, you know. We didn't know what that was, you know, but you did that playing at the schoolyard with your buddies, too.
Yeah.
So I have no regrets. The friendships and the people I met coming up through sports and football, I don't have any regrets. Absolutely not.
We're talking with Dane Janko, the head golf coach at Servite High School. Was teaching the next logical step for you, or did you think you were going in another direction after that once your playing career was over?
I think toward the end of college, the path that I was going to take, I think coaching was a for sure thing. And I think teaching came pretty late. You know, I kind of joke about it. My path of coaching went backwards. You know, it started in college and went back to my alma mater and coached for 2 years. And then I came back to California and started coaching, you know, at Artesia, and it was varsity. And then when I came to Servite, it was varsity, and, you know, and then, you know, I've been the freshman coach going on 20 years at Servite now.
I always ask coaches, did Servite find you, or did you find Servite?
Well, actually, I had my personal training business, and I was training a young man that was attending Servite and became friends with his father, and Servite was looking for possibly their first strength and conditioning coach. And I had a meeting with Coach Toner back at that time and took the position as their strength and conditioning coach. And it just so happened in the spring when I started, Servite only had one PE teacher back then. He was leaving for another position, and that position opened up. And I took the position, and 20-plus years later, this is where I am.
How important is it to you to stay involved with football and to coach that freshman team? Really, these are the young Friars that are going to be the big stars of tomorrow, right?
Correct. My first year of coaching freshman football, that class is the class that had Matthew Slater, Ryan Thalil.
Oh, wow.
You know, Sean Estrada. You know, there were, I believe, 5 NFL guys in that class, and you know, Ryan Thalil was a 135-pound center who couldn't block anybody that year.
And, no, that's not possible. You know, he was never 135 pounds. Couldn't be.
He was 135 pounds in a size 16 shoe.
Wow. He definitely filled into those shoes by the time he got to USC, that's for sure.
He definitely filled out.
Another quick break here on Catholic Sports View. Much more to come on our Best Of Part 2 here on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back right here on Immaculate Heart Radio. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View. Thanks for hanging with us here this week as we continue our Best Of Part 2 of the 16-17 school year. We got a chance to sit down with the Blanc brothers and the swimming and diving program they've built at Santa Margarita, second to none anywhere in the United States. so many strong swim and dive programs, and not every school has a diving team, and we'll get into that as well. But, you know, water polo obviously has become such a big sport in Southern California as well. Has the sport of water polo and its rise, has that helped swimming, or has that maybe taken away some of the swimmers?
Well, I think the two sports go hand in hand very, very well. And a lot of our sprinters that are on the swim program come from water polo. So the two programs can work well together. And I think a successful high school swim program works with the water polo program at the school to make sure that the kids get a chance to do both.
You've been at Santa Margarita now for, well, you started at Mater Dei, correct? You came from Mater Dei to Santa Margarita. How did that happen? How do you become a Monarch one day and then go to an Eagle the next?
Well, I was a graduate of Mater Dei and class of 85 and started coaching there in 88 to 95. But my brother got a full-time teaching position at Santa Margarita, and it just seemed to be a natural just to relocate and set up shop at Santa Margarita, and we've just had so much fun seeing the program grow and develop over the years.
You mentioned your brother Rich, and we're going to talk to him in the next segment. We're going to get the Blanc brothers, get the perspective from both sides, because it really is a family, it's a whole family deal at Santa Margarita, isn't it?
Well, it extends even past my brother. Our sister Renee is also
right.
An assistant coach with us, so she's been coaching for a long time. My brother's wife, Taylor, also coaches with us. So we really get a chance to have more than just a few siblings. Even my brother's mother-in-law also coaches as well, so it really becomes a big family.
Were you all swimmers growing up, the whole family?
All of us were, yes, and you know, different levels. My brother and I had a chance to swim in college at Orange Coast College. But it's just kind of grown on us. And I still remember the very first day of swim practice. It was just something that I knew this was something that we could do and something that we were very fortunate to have been blessed with.
You know, it's one thing to be an athlete and to be a high-caliber athlete. It's a whole other deal to coach and be able to teach that to other kids. Was that just a natural progression, you know, for you to get into coaching?
Well, I think the higher-level athletes don't necessarily make the best coaches. And so that classifies us as being better coaches because we were certainly not the highest level of swimmer. And I think understanding that we weren't the best swimmers allowed us to understand technique and training and motivation to better prepare our students when we got a chance to start coaching.
Ron Blanc joining us this week on Catholic Sports View, the swimming and diving co-head coach, at Santa Margarita High School. We'll be talking to his brother in a couple of minutes as well. Rich, you guys have built such a strong program at Santa Margarita, and that's no small feat because we know the caliber of athlete here, certainly. But in the Trinity League, you know, you're talking about the best of the best here in Southern California.
Well, that's been a very huge source of pride for, especially on the girls' side. We've won 17 straight Trinity League championships,
right.
And to know the caliber of kids that are at the other schools in the Trinity League, it really is amazing. It's amazing that the kids have been able to continue that success. But I think it's a real tribute to their hard work and they're wanting to continue the tradition from one year to the next.
You know, we mentioned your family. Is it also families on the other end who come? I mean, you know, maybe somebody will come and maybe the sister wants to also be an Eagle or the brother wants to come swim as well. Do we see family legacies on the swimmer's end as well?
Oh, definitely. One family in particular just came through. We had a young lady by the name of Jack Schultz that came into the school and had a fabulous swimming career at Santa Margarita. But then her brother followed a couple of years later, and Grant Schultz has done extremely well. He participated in Olympic trials this past summer and is at Stanford as a freshman and broke Stanford's school record in the 500 freestyle. So you see the family traditions continue from the kids as well.
You love the individual sports like swimming and golf where, you know, it's an individual performing, but there's such a team aspect to it, too. And I imagine that's, you know, a big reason for the success as well is that you have that great team aspect around these Eagles.
I think from the very first year that we started coaching, we wanted to transform this what is considered an individual sport to a team sport. So everything that we try to do and talk about during the season is about team. Whether it's the team retreat that we do at the start of the year where we get a chance to really get together and talk about things that maybe have nothing to do with swimming to all the way through the season. If the kids know that they're a part of something bigger than just themselves, they'll perform better, they'll swim faster, they're going to have much greater memories and wonderful stories that they're going to be able to take once they graduate.
Ron Blanc again joining us here on Catholic Sports View this week. Swimming is not unlike track and field in that, you know, at some point as a coach, I'm sure you're able to find the kids who are sprinters, the kids who are distance swimmers. Is that pretty obvious early on, or does it take a while to figure out what the strength is in a certain swimmer?
It's, I think, from the experience of coaching for as many years as we have, it's easy to pick up. We were able to see who's going to be a good sprinter, who's going to be a good distance swimmer. But what happens, especially with the boys, as they're growing, a lot of this will change. And so as they grow, they may find that, that they become a better sprinter, or they may become a better breaststroker. And so that's part of the coaching experience, is to allow their growth to continue so that we can identify what their best events are going to be in the years to come.
Our focus in the spring, of course, turned to baseball. And Don Barbara has taken the St. John Bosco baseball program. It was kind of a middle-of-the-road program there for a few years. He showed up on the scene, and all of a sudden, they became the top team in the Trinity League this year. So we asked Coach Barbara how he was able to take the Braves and turn them into the top team in the entire Trinity. It's been quite a start to your season so far. You guys are humming right along. What's been going right for the Bosco Braves so far this baseball season?
Pretty much everything so far. I mean, the kids,
it looks that way, yeah.
The kids have done a great job. You know, when I took this program over going into my third year this year, we knew we had to make some adjustments. I told my coaching staff from the lower levels on that we have to make some adjustments and, you know, and do some different things. And you know what? The kids who have been in the program for now, going on their third year with me, they have bought in the way, you know, the freshman coach works, the AV coach works, the way I work. And, you know, and it's carried over, you know. And this year we got a group of kids that have been together for a couple of years, especially last year when they were younger, and they kind of got their butts kicked a little bit, but they got the experience. They got to look at what the Trinity League's really about and how competitive it is. And they have really, really done a great job. I mean, both on, off the field, and I'm proud of them. I can't say much about them. But we still got 9 games to go and get through this gauntlet of a league and see where we're at from there.
Yeah, you're not kidding when you say gauntlet of a league. It's not for the faint of heart, certainly, Trinity League Baseball. With a 5-1 mark at this point, right, you're doing something right. Just explain to everybody just how difficult this league is. It, top to bottom, this has got to be the best baseball league, I would think, maybe in the nation.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you're dealing with teams like Orange Lutheran, the good thing is you play them 3 times in a week. I mean, it's tough. It really is. But you find out a lot about each other. So we started out with Modern Day. And Bosco, when we got into this league in I believe it was 2006, we never beat Modern Day and Orange Blue. We haven't done that like we did this year. You know, so I don't really believe that the kids believe that they can beat them. But we got that first taste of playing a top-ranked team in Modern Day. And then we came back. We had some energy. We had to come back with the number one team in the country at the time with Orange Blue. And we still have to face Jay Serra, who's a really good team and always in the national limelight, Santa Margarita, and Servine. And they're all good teams, all good players. And, you know, I think our players have finally figured out, kind of like what Coach Negro did with our football team, it's changed the culture around here in the sense of, hey, we can beat these teams. We're good enough. You just got to believe. And I think once we did that, and I think, you know, looking at everything that Modern Day and Orange Lutheran are really good, that our guys kind of gained some confidence in here.
When you look at the schedule, there's no soft spot on the schedule at all when you're a Trinity League school. You talk about a culture change coming in, and so much of that starts because of the school you're at. St. John Bosco is such a nationally renowned school, not just athletically, but academically as well. And I got to imagine the support that you get from your higher-ups makes all the difference in the world to you.
It does. You know, you talk about the academic side of it, and we really, I believe in the academic side of it, because you can't go to college if you don't do your academics. I don't care if you're a stud athlete. But our team did a great job. You know, we had 25 guys, and we ended up with a 3.3 GPA, team GPA, last semester, and we're hopefully going to be better than that. The principal and the vice principal and the athletic director, they give me so much support here. I mean, this is a phenomenal place to coach, you know, when it comes to my players. And I deal with what we have and how we go about it. We try and go raise as much money as we can. But if I needed something and I can go out and get it, they're very supportive of what I'm doing here, and they're very supportive, you know, with the way I handle the program, which has been outstanding. They just kind of let me go
go and stay within the parameters of what they want, and we do it, and it works well for us.
You mentioned Coach Negro, you know, the football team. Obviously, that program has gone to national heights. We know the basketball team has had great runs over the years. You know, does that help when baseball players say, hey, I want to be at that level too, and maybe it makes them work that much harder because, you know, their buddies on the football and basketball team, maybe some of the other teams are having that kind of success as well?
I believe so. I mean, our guys have always talked about it, you know, and they hear, oh, we want to do this. We want to win the training league. And I just tell them, I go, hey, they did something because Coach Negro came in and changed the things they needed to do, changed the culture, changed the attitude, and they went out and did it. And I had Coach Negro come in and talk to my players this year, not once, but twice, just about what are some of the things that he did. What did he get his players to buy into? Because my first 2 years here was kind of a struggle, you know, with guys trying to buy in. But this team has really bought in to everything we're trying to do. And with Coach Nagler's help and talking about the culture change he had to make, you know, with St. John Bosco, of understanding Mother Day, we can beat Mother Day. We can beat J. Sarah. We can beat Servite. We can beat all these teams. And now look at them. They're a national powerhouse. Well, those are some of the things that we're trying to do here. Having him right there was awesome, you know, and our kids being able to listen to him on how he did it.
It's so true. And Jason Negro is a baseball legend at Bosco.
Yes, he is. He played third base next to Nomar Garciaparra.
Right.
I think that's his legend.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Everybody thinks of him as a football guy, but all of us remember him as a baseball guy back in the day, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
One last break here on Catholic Sports View. And when we come back, we will wrap up our best of for the 16-17 school year right here in the Trinity League. Stay with us. Catholic Sports View, and in our final segment, we start things off by going out to J. Sarah High School, and we talk to their longtime baseball coach, Brett Kay.
You know, we're in your office here, and I look around, I see uniforms and hats, and all the equipment is ready to go. I mean, it's always exciting to start a new season, right?
Yeah, I mean, ours is a little bit different this year because we're so backloaded with our schedule, but what you see is kind of all of our spirit pack stuff, all of our gear. We just created something new on our wall that is really, really cool. So this is kind of like storage / office / my cave. So you want to call it a man cave, this is what it is. So
is there ever an off season?
No, not for us. It's funny because my wife's pregnant and probably going to deliver any minute now.
Well, we won't keep you.
No. But there's no Sundays are basically our time off, but I'm still on the field or in the office or getting some stuff done. And, you know, there's really no off season with as competitive as Southern California baseball is. And
you mentioned the long road up, and you know, for a school like J. Sarah, which is still a newer school in the Orange County landscape, some of the other sports teams that have taken their time and their lumps, you know, to kind of move up, especially in the Trinity League, which is maybe the toughest league in the entire nation. But this baseball program just hit the ground running almost from day one. What was the difference in this baseball program?
Back in 2007, or I was 26 at the time, so I knew the vision I had in mind, and I knew kind of the culture we wanted to create. You know, I've always said, you know, in order to be successful, you got to surround yourself with good people. And so it started off with hiring a coaching staff. And, you know, we had players that were hungry and wanted to and wanted to listen. And we had to change kind of that, the systematic of what J-Sarah is. And we think we did that. And, you know, once the word kind of got out, I think it started to become more attractable to players, to student athletes. And it's been a good run. We've had some obviously really good years. And, you know, we've had some tough years. So baseball goes in waves. And anybody can beat you on any given day. But, you know, we're excited to where we're, what we've accomplished.
You know, Little League and youth baseball is big, you know, obviously everywhere. But in some ways, it's almost like religion in South Orange County. I mean, the programs down here are big time. And I imagine those are the feeder programs, you know, the future Lions you hope to get in your program someday.
Yeah, I mean, we're all aware of how good South Orange County baseball is, or baseball in Orange County in general. So now it's about, you know, marketing and your programs and, you know, really how well-rounded the student-athlete is. You know, if people want to come to J. Sarah, they have to understand they have to come here for the well-roundedness of the school, not just the baseball program. You know, our players are fairly academic. We've averaged a 3.55 over the last 2 years, and that's 1 through 75 in our program. So they're getting it done academically and have to understand that that's first and foremost. Baseball secondary. Baseball's almost third. You've got, you know, a lot of different aspects of who you are as a J. Sarah student athlete. So, you know, they have to represent their school, their family, and then obviously the baseball program. So that's an important part of kind of how we are. But it's kind of cliche, but it's really about, you know, they have to understand that I'm 37, still in college at this point in time, and I don't want them to be with the place that I'm in now because I took school for granted at a point in time in my life. So it's important that they understand about how it is to be a well-rounded student.
A lot of that, too, is the Catholic faith that the school is based upon. And you know, kids, obviously, you know, you mentioned they come here for a lot of different reasons, but, you know, that's part of it, too. And, then you know, when they come in, you know, they have to buy into the fellowship aspect of it, too, I imagine.
Well, that's the most important part of our school. You know, our identity as a Catholic institution and the founders of our school back in, you know, 2003, that was an important piece, the most important piece. You know, our kind of motto is faith, intellect, and character, and the first one was faith. So, you know, they have to understand that not everyone's Catholic here, but everybody's going to have, you know, an idea of finding what faith is and finding their path in life from a faith standpoint.
Visiting with Brett Kaye, the head baseball coach out at J. Sarah High School this week on Catholic Sports View. It's funny, some schools are, you know, football schools, you know, that's their identity. Others are basketball schools, that's their identity. I feel like modern day have both, you know, identities. This is a baseball school. I mean, I'll say it. I mean, maybe some other people won't say it, but it's kind of a rare breed. I mean, this really has become a baseball school, and that's not to look down on the football program, which has had its successes, and basketball, other sports here have had their successes, but I think it's the success of this baseball program that has really shot to the top, as I kind of mentioned at the top of the interview.
I think we've had our successes. I'll be the first one to say we're not a baseball school. I love more than anything to see, you know, what girls soccer did on Saturday and won a CIF championship, and what Coach Brogdon and Coach Rosignol, you know, are in the state regionals this coming week. So what cross country has done, what lacrosse has done, you know, what girls tennis did last year, they won a league championship. So I enjoy that. I like it. I think it's a feather in the cap. But, you know, like I talked about earlier about the well-roundedness of the school, I'm not here to stick out our chest and say baseball's arrived. You know, I want every single program to be successful. And I love our girls soccer players. There's some players there that are great girls, great young student athletes. And to see them and Coach Baker and them to succeed is awesome. So we're rooting for everybody. We've had our successes and we've had some early, but it's all about the whole 23 sports that we have here.
I think you really do bring up a great point, though. It's that, you know, everybody here buys into what J. Sarah is, which is a community and a family. I imagine a lot of that came from Jim Hartigan, you know, the athletic director who's built this thing up. Almost from the ground up.
Yeah, it's been a combination of a lot of different things. I think of hiring the right people and getting the right people into place so that we can start understanding what continuity is and fellowship and, you know, to be able to understand and have conversations with other coaches and share ideas and share organizational skills and practice plans and whatnot. You know, that's our new football coach asked me to give a speech in the fall, this coming fall, to the football players before a game, and I was kind of blown away by that.
Well, we wrap up our look back at the 16-17 school year with an interview we did with Santa Margarita hockey coach Craig Johnson. They won a national title, and he's gone from player to coach, and it's been a seamless transition for Craig Johnson. You grew up in Minnesota. Was it just a natural to have a hockey stick in your hand from a young age?
Yeah, my dad started me when I was probably about 3 years old. We lived right by a lake, and in the wintertime there wasn't a lot to do. So you would go down to the lake, you'd ice fish, you'd skate, you'd, you know, whatever you could do. And I found it to be a lot of fun when I was little. My dad said I never wanted to leave. So growing up in Minnesota, it's like playing basketball in Indiana or football in Texas.
Right.
You know, you go to the state hockey tournament, and each year they're getting 20,000 people at the games.
Whew.
You know, the state championship this year between Eden Prairie and Grand Rapids was 20,000 spectators. So it's a great atmosphere. It's a great place. It was a great place for me to grow up. I enjoyed it. I always talk about in California we have to travel a lot. We have to travel. Like this year, we had to go to Cleveland for the national championships. We went to Minnesota three times with our team. Growing up in Minnesota from where I was born to all the way through college hockey, I think the furthest rink I really went to was about 15 miles from my house.
Oh, wow.
So my high school was 15 minutes away. The University of Minnesota was 7 minutes from my house. So I was very lucky in that way in that I didn't have to travel much.
So by the time you really hadn't traveled much till you got into professional hockey, I imagine. And at that point, it must have been a real eye-opening experience to see the rest of the U.S. and Canada and other places and worldwide, as it turned out for you.
Yeah, right. The only time I really left the state is we had U.S. national camps, like for 15, 16-year-olds, and those were in Colorado Springs. And other than that, I never left the state of Minnesota.
growing up, obviously, you know, there's you and there's thousands of other kids that want to play hockey. At what point did you know, number one, that this was something that you really wanted to do, and number two, that it was something you were really good at?
Well, again, you know, growing up there, it's different because, yes, you had the Minnesota North Stars, but for me, my biggest goal when I was young was to play high school hockey. I wanted to go to, I grew up in St. Paul, and I wanted to play for Hill Murray High School, which was one of the top teams in the state, and that was my goal. When I hit that goal, my next goal, I wanted to play for the Gophers, because growing up, watching their games, you know, the games were on television, you were familiar with the players,
right?
So you wanted to be a Gopher, and, you know, those were my dreams, and everything else just kind of fell into place. All of a sudden, people started looking at me. I was drafted by St. Louis in the second round, and all of a sudden, at that moment I was drafted, which was in 1990, I thought, you know what, I might have a chance to play pro hockey. And when I went to the university, I got 3 years of great development. I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity to play on the U.S. Olympic team in 1994. And after that, when I got back from the Olympics, I signed my first pro contract with St. Louis.
Yeah, you led me into my next question here, which is talk about living your dreams. I mean, you know, you mentioned high school and in college, you're checking off the list. To play professional hockey is probably beyond most kids' dreams. And then to be able to represent your country and put on that sweater, that had to just be the end all be all right there.
Yeah, representing, you know, your country, anytime you get to put on the sweater, the USA sweater, it's a great honor. To grow up in Minnesota, to see the 1980 Olympic team coached by Herb Brooks that had many Minnesotans on it,
right.
It became a dream of every kid to play in the Olympics. So that was an incredible experience, walking in the opening ceremonies, being able to go to the athletes' village, and all of a sudden I had a Gatorade with Tommy Moe, who won the downhill skiing medal,
right.
Earlier that day, and I had no idea. We were just talking, and I go, oh, have you competed yet? He goes, yeah, I just competed today. I'm like, how'd you do? He goes, well, I won the gold. So it was pretty neat, and then just the whole experience of, you know, Norway was such a beautiful country, and they did a great job hosting, and, you know, to walk in the opening ceremonies was a dream come true.
Craig Johnson joining us here this week on Catholic Sports View. He's the former professional hockey player, and he's currently the head coach of the Santa Margarita Hockey Program. You mentioned Herb Brooks, and obviously that's a legacy that you can fill volumes with. Is that a legacy that's still felt in Minnesota and in all of USA Hockey to this day?
For sure, for sure. What he did for the sport, what he did, you know, to put USA Hockey on the map was, you know, to win that gold and to achieve it the way they achieved it against a team that was so dominant, which was the Soviet Union. And he was an amazing man. I was fortunate enough to be able to know him a little bit. And I knew his family, and, you know, they're great people, and they love the sport, and they love the St. Paul kids as well.
What's it like to be part of that fraternity that represented the United States? You can always say, I was part of that. I got to represent, you know, USA Hockey at the Olympics. I imagine it's a pretty special fraternity to be a part of.
It is. You know, it's something every kid dreams about, you know, whether it be in the Summer Olympics, the Winter Olympics. And as far as comparing us to the 80 Olympics, we were a little bit further away. We lost in our crossover game, which is the quarterfinals. I think we lost to Finland. We were a young team. We were playing against a lot of pros from Finland, and we were kind of young and naive, and we thought we were pretty good, and they kind of showed us the the proper way to play hockey.
Thanks again for joining us here this week as we took a look back at the best of the 16-17 school year in the Trinity League. We sure hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, and we look forward to much more as we head to the summer, and then we'll have the 17-18 school year right around the corner. Keep it right here on Immaculate Heart Radio. I am Bob Gibson. Thanks again for listening. You're listening to Immaculate Heart Radio.